Adam Smith wrote in The Wealth of Nations that consumption is the sole end and purpose of all production. So, American consumers, what are you waiting for? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday, today the 20th of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. I'm going to read a little list here. You took them off on your fingers as I go along, all right? Declining business investment, number one. Slowing economic growth overall, GDP, number two. That inverted yield curve we mentioned last week, number three. Global weakness, number four. I think you get my point. The American economy is strong, but if you are clear-eyed about things, there are some trouble spots to keep an eye on. One economic spot that is not trouble, though, the American consumer. Despite all those other things I mentioned, people here are still buying stuff, and they feel generally good about things. But how much of that economic load do you suppose consumers can bear before they break? Marketplace's Ben Bradford gets us going.
Consider Lori McAllister's 17-year-old washing machine.
It sounds like a jet engine is taking off in my laundry room.
McAllister says the washer at her home outside Cincinnati isn't harming her clothes, but she's going to buy a replacement as a public service.
It's still getting them clean. The sound is a lot. I'm afraid my neighbors are going to start worrying about me.
McAllister and her husband like to squeeze every working moment out of their possessions, but they're making big purchases. They replaced their 21-year-old car in September. They're also considering paying off their mortgage early. Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton, says people like the McAllisters are keeping the economy afloat.
The U.S. consumer has played Atlas and held the rest of the economy up, even as businesses have pulled back.
The question is,
can they continue to bear the burden of that weight as the economy slows?
The answer depends on who you ask. Steve Odland at the Conference Board thinks consumer spending will motivate businesses to start investing again.
You know, with the majority of the economy driven by the consumer, if the consumer spending stays strong, the economy should stay strong.
But people are only spending because they have jobs. Loyola Marymount economist Sungwon Seon says the trade war and the possibility of a recession could change that.
I don't think businesses will hire as many people as they have in the past.
Economic optimism isn't what's driving Lori McAllister's spending spree.
With tariffs and with talk of economic turndown, we are just thinking, let's just do it now.
President Trump is with her on that last part. He said again today that the administration is considering a temporary payroll tax cut. More money in consumers' pockets to keep them spending. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
From the corporate profit desk today, Home Depot. Almost $3.5 billion net revenue April through June. But hang on to your tool belt, gang, because the home improvement giant cut its sales forecast for the year, blaming two items in particular. Tariffs is the easy one, and what they're going to do to the aforementioned American consumers and our spending power. But also the deflated price of lumber, which is interesting because wasn't all that long ago that those prices were anything but deflated. Marketplace's Amy Scott is on that one.
Back in May of last year, the price of 1,000 feet of Western spruce 2x4s topped $650. Today, it's about $340. Paul Yonke follows the lumber market at Forest Economic Advisors.
It's crazy the difference that a year can make, right?
In 2018, a lack of supply and stronger than expected demand from the U.S. housing market drove prices to record highs. So Yonke says lumber mills ramped up production just as construction started to slow down. He says most lumber is used either for building new homes or repairing and remodeling old ones, so-called R&R. And when you compare the first half of this year with the first half of 2018,
R&R markets, according to the government statistics, are down 17% year over year, and the single family home markets are down about 4%.
The drop in prices has given home builders, who are facing higher labor and land costs, a bit of a break. Rob Dietz is chief economist with the National Association of Home Builders.
So for builders and home buyers and homeowners who want to remodel, the lower lumber prices are a buying opportunity.
But for Home Depot, it means lower revenue. Analyst Brian Yarbrough with Edward Jones says take a 4x8 sheet of plywood. What Home Depot sold for $18 last year is now going for $7. And even though the company is also paying less for those boards,
You have to sell basically two sheets for every one you were selling before just to have the same sales number. And so that's difficult.
But Yarbrough expects lumber prices to rebound as supply and demand come back into balance. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, I mean, look, the president's beating up on the Fed. Still, there's talk of more tax cuts, as Ben was saying. Trade policy is a toss-up at best. We're lucky traders get out of bed every day with that going on. When they got up today, they decided to sell. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. This is one of those interview setups where I could play some audio from the President of the United States to help frame what we're going to be talking about, but it wouldn't be anything you haven't heard before. The topic at hand is this economy, how it's doing, and where credit properly lies. Insert Trump tape here. Economics correspondent Heather Long and her colleagues at the graphics department of the Washington Post have put together a series of 15 handy-dandy charts to put the American economy into some recent historical context. Heather, it's good to talk to you again.
Great to be back.
With the caveat that presidents, of course, have less influence on the economy than, frankly, people tend to believe. This is now President Trump's economy. He talks about it a lot. You have dug into these numbers. And I want to start with the things that the president rightly gets credit for. Number one on that list is, I think you have to say, is wages, right?
I think you're right, Kai. Most Americans are now seeing wages grow by about 3% a year, and we hadn't seen that in over a decade. A lot of people often write into me and say, but wait a minute, what about inflation? My costs are going up. Right. And they're right that you have to look at it in inflation-adjusted terms. But at the moment, wages are growing about 3% a year, and inflation's only about 1.6% a year. So we're seeing some actual pretty darn good wage gains right now. President Trump, when he did that tax cut and the deregulation push and increased government spending, a lot of that was to boost an already good economy to try to run it a little bit hotter. And that does seem to have paid off in higher wages, at least for a while.
Right. Along with that, of course, comes consumer and business confidence, also generally speaking, up under President Trump.
Yes, that's one you could see right from Election Day. There was just a big jump. I know you've covered it with both those confidence metrics shooting up. But the big question, and a lot of people have been scratching their heads, is confidence has been up, but spending, actual spending, hasn't necessarily jumped as much. Usually when that confidence rises, you see businesses and consumers go out and spend more. Certainly consumers are still spending a lot, but businesses, because of that trade war, have really pulled back.
Right. It's that category called business investment. Let me ask you about another one that maybe doesn't go so well in President Trump's favor. The debt and annual deficit in this economy now with the tax cut and his government spending.
It's hard to remember back, but on the campaign trail, the president actually promised to cut the debt, if not eliminate it, in his 8 years in office. That is certainly not the case. He has continued to spend. So a lot of this faster wage growth has been coming because he basically took the government credit card and went out and spent more money.
Do me a favor and contextualize this whole conversation. As I said up at the top, presidents get a disproportionate amount of credit and also blame, frankly, for the economy. The thing that President Trump never talks about, because he's President Trump, is that many of these trends that are working toward the upside for him are continuations of Obama-era policies.
Yeah, that's right. For the last couple of weeks, everybody's been so fixated on, are we headed into a recession? But I think what's more likely is that we'll be sitting here in a year and this economy will be growing about 1.5 to 2%. Unemployment will be around 4%. Manufacturing will probably still be struggling, maybe in a recession. And the consumer could potentially still look pretty good. That kind of economy is almost exactly what we saw in 2016 at the end of the Obama era. What we're seeing is that Trump, for all of his talk about how great he is as an economic conductor here, really hasn't changed much for this economy overall.
Heather Long is the economics correspondent at the Washington Post. Fascinating article today, 15 charts, the Obama and Trump presidencies compared. Heather, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
For investors and for media consumers as well, waiting for an honest-to-goodness Apple TV streaming service has been not unlike waiting for Godot, often promised, never delivered. But, says Bloomberg, the wait will soon be over. Apple TV Plus is going to launch in November, is the Bloomberg report, $9.99 a month. Apple itself hasn't said much about the service since saying back in April that it was going to happen at all, but it does join an ever-growing number of streaming services, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, Disney Plus, HBO Now, I could go on. Anyway, each of which have their own costs, and that makes cutting the cord cheaper maybe, but not cheap. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra has that one.
A few years ago, Alex Kerr decided she was tired of cable. She was paying for all these channels she never watched, so she cut the cord, literally.
They had stapled wires probably 20 feet along the baseboards of my house. So it was ripping out the wires, trying not to damage the wall. I had to then actually take off time from work to go return the cable box.
It was a hassle. But her cable bill was about $75 a month. And she thought, I'm going to save so much money now. She got Netflix and Hulu, then HBO, because, you know, Game of Thrones, Westworld, then Showtime. Got to watch Billions.
But then it kind of creeps up on you and you start finding other services that you want. And suddenly it's, okay, so I'm spending $40 or $50 a month.
$58, to be exact. She did that calculation for us today.
Yeah, I didn't actually realize that until I did the math. It practically is a cable subscription.
It's getting harder to find all the shows you want to watch on just one or two streaming services. Taylor Cole Miller at the University of Georgia says legacy media companies are pulling their shows off of services like Netflix and Hulu and starting their own.
So if you want to get access to The Office, for instance, you're going to have to subscribe to NBC's new streaming service.
That can add up to more subscriptions and more money. But the cord cutters I talked to today said they still prefer streaming to cable. It allows them to come and go as they please. Zach Hampton is 37 and he lives in Salt Lake City.
I'm a huge Trekkie, and so I subscribe to CBS and I watch Star Trek when it's on. And then when the season ends, I kill the subscription until the next year when it comes on again.
So he can binge watch a show and then get rid of the service at a whim. No cord cutting required. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Yeah, but you got to remember to cut the service, right? Otherwise you lose. This is an entirely unplanned cross-promotion, swear to goodness. But as it happens, Molly Wood and I did a whole podcast today on this very topic. Streaming, who wins, who loses, and what's in it for consumers. Make Me Smart is the podcast we do. Check it out. Coming up.
Basically alcoholic LaCroix.
I mean, how much more do you need to know? Hard seltzer, straight ahead. But first, let's do the numbers. All right, here you go. On a Tuesday, Dow Industrials off 173, 0.6%, 25,962. The NASDAQ dropped 54 points, about 0.6%, 79.48. The S&P 500 gave up 23, 0.7%, 2,900 on the nose. Rough session for retailers today. Kohl's beat analyst profit expectations, but also cut its profit forecast for the rest of the year, thanks in part, wait for it, to the trade war. Kohl's down 6.8% on the day. Macy's off 4.7%. Nordstrom gave up 3.6%. Home Depot blamed the trade war when it pared back its sales growth forecast today, as we said, but that did not hurt shares. Home Depot gained 4.3% today because capitalism. One bright spot among retailers, JCPenney, finished the day up 3.2% today after its chairman bought a million shares. Remember that story we did the other day about it being a penny stock. Bond prices, well, they rose. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.55%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. $1,500 is what an ounce of gold cost you at the close this afternoon. $1,507 to be precise. That's up 16% since the start of the year. There are a lot of reasons people buy gold, of course, but one of the biggies, especially relevant given the macroeconomic mood right now, is that it's considered the safest of safe havens when other investments look like they might be going south. Marketplace's Justin Ho is on the precious metals desk.
As the market's gotten more volatile, 31-year-old Justin Panayotis says he's been thinking about less risky places to park his money.
It's difficult for me to buy something and feel secure. You know, I mean, everybody's searching for security.
Investors often turn to gold for that security when regular stocks swing around. Panayotis has about 10% of his portfolio in gold. It's been a go-to investment since he was in college. Plus, he says it's easy to get your hands on different amounts of gold. Sebastian Malaby at the Council on Foreign Relations says gold's divisibility, you can buy a bar or just a few coins, is a big reason it's historically been used as a store of value.
I mean, if you had used, say, a cow as a store of value, it's less convenient, right? Because you have to cut the cow up into pieces.
There's still the issue of storage. Holding on to actual gold can be costly. Investors can get around that by buying stocks in companies that mine gold. But they are stocks, and their value can be affected by other factors, like labor issues.
For a long time, investors recognized that it was actually quite difficult to stick gold in your portfolio.
That's Dave Nodig. He's the managing director of ETF.com, a site that analyzes exchange-traded funds. ETFs buy up assets, usually stocks, and they pool them together. Investors buy shares of that pool. According to the World Gold Council, last month, people moved $2.6 billion into gold ETFs.
They basically buy gold, they stick it in a vault, and then the shares, the interest in that vault, are traded on an exchange just like shares of any mutual fund.
But no matter how easy it is to invest in gold, there's still a cost. No stock dividends or bond interest. No big gains from a bull run on the stock market. Chris Vecchio, senior currency strategist at Daily FX, says if people are investing in gold,
people are thinking about something else. Something else is motivating traders right now.
Like a weaker European economy and the trade war, which could slow global growth even more. Vecchio says what's been driving up the price of gold lately is the belief that the metal will hold its value when everything else does poorly. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Artificial intelligence is here to stay. We all know that. And the algorithms are getting smarter every day. But there are still some real challenges for AI, among the biggest of which is language interpretation and translation. Not just because there are so many languages, but also because machines still have a heck of a time figuring out all the nuance and context of human speech and the written word. Yes, getting it right would be a cool technological achievement, but also eventually, yeah, business opportunity. Marketplace's Andy Euler reports.
My dad is trying to learn Spanish, but it's slow going, so he often turns to Google Translate on his phone when he's got something he wants to say.
Where's the bathroom?
It's pretty simple.
¿Dónde está el baño?
Google nailed it, but then he asked for this one in Spanish.
Give me a ring when you're ready.
It's something English speakers say all the time, but the phrase is a little idiomatic, so what you get back?
Dame un anillo cuando estés listo.
It's not quite right. Google thought my dad was talking about the kind of ring you put on your finger. Translation has come a long way in the past few years, but there's still a lot of work to do. What scientists are really after is something like that ugly little creature from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the babblefish.
If you stick one in your ear, you instantly understand anything said to you in any language.
That is the Holy Grail.
Andrew Ochoa is CEO of Waverly Labs. A product his company plans to launch in November is called Ambassador. It's an over-the-ear translation device that will require Wi-Fi, a smartphone, and Bluetooth.
As the information is being processed and captured via your earphones and earbuds, that data signal is being sent through your smartphone to the cloud where it's processed and then relays back through the smartphone to the cloud.
The Ambassador is going to sell for $149. Bigger tech firms, your Googles and Microsofts, are investing billions into artificial intelligence, including language translation. Google recently revealed it's working on something called Translatotron, which is supposed to convert what you say into another language in your own voice simultaneously. Dave Kemp runs the website Future Ear. He thinks Google might find translation's holy grail before anybody else.
Google is a search company, but they're also a data company. And what they're so good at is taking their data and then basically learning from their data.
Google didn't want to talk, but said in an email, it's not trying to profit directly from translation. Instead, it sees mastery of world languages as a way to extend its global reach. Dave Kemp thinks translation will likely be a moneymaker for Google. Here's one way that could work on your phone.
You know, if you say, navigate me to the best Parisian cafe, you know, if I'm in Paris, and somehow that's tied to, you know, not only the location settings, but the translation.
If Google perfected that piece of translation, it could sell more ads. Lorian Pratt is chief scientist in an AI firm, Quantelia. She says what Google is working on is translation for everyday life, casual conversation. Translation tech has to advance much further for conducting business, where mistakes could cost a lot of money.
And then there's jargon-specific translation. So like if I'm a medical practitioner or a lawyer or something like that, obviously that needs extra intelligence.
Because that's the stuff you just can't get wrong. The consequences are far greater than using the wrong noun when you're looking for the bathroom. She says the current technology is advancing quickly, but the true babblefish? That's still just science fiction. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
The drink of the moment in certain circles, the drink of the summer at any rate, is hard seltzer, the best known brand of which is called White Claw. And not only is hard seltzer a beverage thing, it's a growing business thing as well. Bethany Byron wrote about it for Business Insider. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Hard seltzer? That's like a thing now?
Apparently so.
Is it literally just like seltzer water with alcohol in it, or is it any more ornate than that?
It's more or less that. Yeah, it's fermented sort of similarly to the way they make champagne, I guess, and then just put in a can, basically alcoholic LaCroix.
And alcoholic LaCroix. Where did this come from? Because it's I don't recall seeing it around like 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, so I believe it actually started around 4 or 5 years ago, wow, but really took off in the past year or so. I had never personally heard of hard seltzer at all until I went home for Thanksgiving last year.
I'm from Columbus, Ohio, originally. Give me the geographic locator here, yeah.
So I was at a group of my guy friends from growing up, all lived together in downtown Columbus, and they just had cases and cases of Truly, all flavors and varieties. Later that night, we went to a bar, and they were selling it at the bar, and I had just never seen this before. And I currently live in Brooklyn, and I just, you know, hadn't even seen it at the store there.
which says something. If it's not in Brooklyn, I mean, you know. Is this taking away from spirits and beer and all of that? I mean, are we seeing that?
Yeah, so I think that's actually the most interesting part of this, is that hard seltzer, you know, it's really gaining clout in this area, and I think there was recent data that came out that it's grown by 200% in the past year and wow, has the potential to become a $2.5 billion market by 2021. But I think the most telling stat that I came across while reporting is it was, I believe, the top spirit or top growing spirit for the 4th of July weekend, which historically is a very popular weekend for, you know, heavy drinking and partying. Yeah. So for the beer and spirits industry, it's pretty telling and indicative of how the rest of the year will go.
So you've clearly had some of these, right? What'd you think?
So I feel like I have the unpopular opinion of not loving them. And to be fair, I have only tried a few varieties. My personal leaning is towards more like IPAs and craft
there
beers.
There you go.
I think I don't love the idea of cocktails in a can, but I totally understand why people seem to like it.
Bethany Byron covers retail at Business Insider. Bethany, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, Kai.
This final note on the way out today, a help wanted ad of sorts. You know all those 737 MAXs that Boeing's got sitting around not yet cleared to go back to flying? Well, they can't just sit there, right? They are finely engineered machines. They have to be kept up. CNBC had this story. Boeing, as you know, has kept building MAXs even though they have nowhere to go. So the company is hiring hundreds of people, won't say exactly how many, but hundreds, to maintain those airplanes. Avionics technicians, aircraft mechanics, airframe and power plant mechanics, aircraft electricians as well. Boeing has got some openings for you. All right, we're out of here. Dow Industrials off 173 today, 0.6%. The NASDAQ off 54, about 0.6% there as well. S&P 500 gave back 23.7% on that particular index. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Samantha Fields, Joanne Griffith, Ben Hethcote, and Sarah Menendez. Sarah Muti is the executive director of digital. Sitar Nieves is our executive director of on-demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.